Welcome to the Jiu-Jitsu of Life, a weekly podcast for BJJ enthusiasts who are striving to succeed both on and off the mats. This podcast is brought to you by Robles, makers of the world's finest custom jiu-jitsu apparel. And here are your hosts on the Jiu-Jitsu of Life, Carter Fisk and Mo Siddiqui.
Welcome to the Jiu-Jitsu of Life podcast. This is episode number 161.
Yo, 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 with special guest Calum Callista. He's becoming a friend of the show, and he's a friend of ours, as the mobsters would say. He's a friend of ours.
It's always a pleasure to be here.
How are you doing, brother man?
Good, good. Licking my wounds at a tough battle last night. On NFC, I had a super fight there. Me and my son both get pinned on the same card. I ended up losing on points and suffered a mild concussion, but Other than that, I'm doing pretty good.
Whoa. Was it televised on Flow Grappling?
Yeah, it was on Flow Grappling.
Very nice, very nice.
Check out that gi I was wearing there. Everybody was talking about it, that Cobra Kai.
Nice.
What a fire.
I love it. How did the concussion come about?
It wasn't anything, any fault of the organization, because they had these poles outside the stage, like these big, like, how would you call them? Like, pillars, uh-huh. Right? And it was so far out that you wouldn't think somebody would hit him, right? So I'm coming forward to this guy to like grab him to pull guard, and he pulls what's it called, Tominagi or something, I think throw him over your head, and goes to hit that on me, and I'm just like, and I'm like looking, I'm going right towards this pole. It's so funny in that short amount of time how much stuff is going through my mind. For about the next couple of minutes, I was seeing double and just like really bad, but I wasn't gonna quit, so I got back up and finished the match. And
wow,
it was good. It was okay.
Nice. Tell me, how much do you study your opponent before you compete? Like, do you do your homework on them? You figure out who they are, what they like to do, or do you just kind of like, you know, whatever happens, happens, and I just kind of flow with it?
I've kind of done a little bit of both, and I'm kind of torn between the two, because sometimes, you know, like researching and stuff, it kind of gets me a little bit nervous, I guess, like expecting one thing, because I did that going into a match one time for Fight to Win. I studied this guy big time, and then he did completely opposite of what I thought he was going to do, and it's like I kind of had a mind blank. I didn't know what to do, you know, like, yeah, I'll study sometimes, and then sometimes I kind of like to just wing it, you know, like go for it, see what happens, you know, like, because it's kind of like I feel I do really good at training. So in training, I'm not studying anybody. If a new black belt comes to my gym, you know, we just slap, bump, and go, you know, and it's like, may the best person win, you know, so. But I guess there's some strategy in studying, you know what I mean? And to answer your question, I guess I'm 50-50. It's tough.
I like it. How did Vance do?
Vance, he competed against Milton Bastos' son.
Okay.
Really good match. He was winning the first two rounds, and then they had an overtime round, and Vance lost on points in that overtime round. But, man, what a great match. They both did really, really good. That kid that he faced is super talented. I think 16 years old. I've been training since he's like 5.
Yeah.
And I tell you who I'm very impressed with is Vance. I mean, I hope that he just stays laser focused and sticks with it, because I think that kid is going to be able to do some things in jiu-jitsu, and especially on a competitive level.
Yeah. Yeah. Like we went to South Carolina and competed in absolute division there. He's 122 pounds. And he faced a guy that was like 260 in the final and ended up beating the guy.
Wow.
And he does amazing against people twice his size. You know, he's had knee smashing him. And, you know, our gym in the Dominican, I think besides me and my oldest son, our smallest guy was around 200. So he just got abused every day, and he kind of just learned to deal with pressure really good. But I agree with you. As long as he keeps his mind right, and who knows, he hasn't had got a girlfriend yet, so.
There's plenty of time. Plenty of time for all of that. Stay focused. Stay focused.
Yeah. He's doing good. He's down on himself about that loss, but like I say, you know, it happens. You know, as long as you learn from it, he knows what he needs to work on now.
Yeah. Well, speaking of focus, what are you focused on right now, moving forward?
We're actually opening a new gym July 1st. We're going to open it. So that's kind of been my main focus right there.
When you say a new gym, Caleb, is that a separate location or?
I think from where I was.
Okay.
We've just outgrown it. You know, it's, this being a Army base, it's just like we're getting a big overflow of people, you know? So it's like every week we're signing four or five more students, and we just outgrew the spot, and we kind of got to expand a little bit, which is great. You know, it's just a big difference in the Dominican Republic. You know, like in the Dominican, you still pay the lease, turn the lights on, that's it. So here, you know, I'm running around all day getting permits for water and this and that. It's like, wow, I didn't know it was so hard to open a business in the States, you know?
Well, those are good problems to have. What do you think why do you think jiu-jitsu is growing so much in that community, and why do you think you're doing so well?
Well, we had a lot of the soldiers here, they, you know, they do that combatants program in the military. It's kind of like mandatory for them to do that. So I was coaching a little bit of that, and, you know, it kind of just kind of blends into it. That combatants is kind of like old school Gracie self-defense type stuff. So they, you know, they look to get better in that. So they kind of come over, and, you know, we just competition wise, man, we've only been open, I think, 8-9 months, and every first competition we went to, we placed fourth overall. Next competition we went to, we placed third overall, and then after that, second overall. You know, so we're just kind of taking the area over. I mean, I hate to sound cocky saying that, but, you know, we just brought a good thing here, and we've got really good, hungry talent.
What's your focus going into, like, as an instructor? Like, how do you go about building culture in your specific school? You know, because I think that's such a big thing about the team being cohesive, and building that culture. And I think that that's something that, you know, we have. What's unique about Robles is that we get to work with a lot of different school owners.
Yeah.
And, you know, we always kind of know which are the school owners that aren't going to last too long and which are the ones that are going to be around for a very long time.
And
usually not the guy who's most well-known in jiu-jitsu or who's best at jiu-jitsu even. It's usually the guy that's very good about building a community around the school.
Well, that's kind of what I've done here is, I think we talked about a little bit in the last podcast, is I use kind of that African proverb, Mbuku. It's I am because we are, you know? So if I can't make everyone around me great, I can't become great. You know what I mean? So I try to invoke that in every one of our students. So if we get a brand new guy that comes in there, everybody's trying, you know, blue belts and stuff are coming over there. They're trying to help him get better. You know, we're all focused as one solid unit. Like I say, we're all we are is just the ball bearings that make the whole motor work. The motor is Team Callista. Each one of us play a component to make that team push forward, you know? And like I say, if a 16-year-old kid walks in and it's his first class and I can in time make him a champion, how much better do you think that's going to make me as a competitor or my students as a competitor, you know? So we just focus. Go ahead.
Yeah. Would you say that is your focus for your school, is when parents come in or whoever comes in, that your school is going to be focused on competition? Or what do you do with the kids that are like, I'm 16, but I don't really want to compete, but I do want to learn jiu-jitsu. I want to better myself by learning some sort of self-defense.
That's a good question. It's been a struggle for me because I've always been a competition-based academy, and I've recently implicated like kind of a form that they fill out when they come in, like asking what are their needs and their goals and stuff, because like I had some kids come in before that the parents were telling me that they're being bullied at school, And, you know, that kind of, like, touched me because, I mean, we all know, like, I can't go teach him Brembolo and that's going to help him, you know, and somebody taking their lunch money. You know what I mean? So I've had to kind of incorporate a lot of different programs, and that's what I'm going to do with the new academy here is we're going to focus a self-defense class. And I've always got, like, I've kind of thrown in beginners with everybody, and now we're going to separate that beginner class. Because, you know, we're getting a lot of people getting overwhelmed with all that. That way I can focus my competition stuff on people who want competition, people who want to lose weight, just, you know, get in shape and stuff.
My brother, so you are going down a road where you set me up for this next question. It's a question that I really wanted to ask because it's a question that I hear thrown around a lot. And you'll hear this from mainly a lot of, I don't know if you hear it from new school guys, but old school guys. Is they talk about the McDojo, and then they'll preface it with something like, you know, well, the McDojo, right? Like, it's not true jiu-jitsu because now they're catering to this guy that wants to lose weight, or they're catering to this person that wants to do this. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, I Carter and I have talked about this before. One, I believe everybody is at a different level, and there's nothing wrong with catering to those different levels. I also think that people are looking for different things. I think some people are more hardcore. Maybe they want to be MMA fighters and they want to go hard day in and day out. But I don't think that that's for everybody. And I don't think that the beauty of jiu-jitsu should be excluded from those people just because they're not in a mental or physical place to go hard like that. I can tell you when I'm 60 years old, I am all about wanting to, even now, I don't have to be 60. I'm 41 right now. And I'm not looking for the hard rolls every day. You know what I mean? And I also think that you also have to take into account that it's a business, right? And that doesn't mean that you can't teach real jiu-jitsu. But I also think that there's some expectations amongst parents. And I also think that you're competing with, like, taekwondo and karate and parents, they don't really know, like, jiu-jitsu. To them, it's all the same, right? They don't know who the Gracies are. They don't really know, like, is this karate or what is it? They just want to put their kids in something that they can bully-proof them, give them some self-esteem, some confidence. And you know, I think that you've got to take those things into account. I say all this only to say that I don't own a jiu-jitsu school, right? So you do own a jiu-jitsu school. What's your take on all the McDojo stuff?
It's been a learning process. You know, I'm kind of learning as I go, because I was the same way. I thought to myself, like, you know, I just want competitors in here, and if you can't cut it, you know what I mean, get out of here. And my gym was a smelly, you know, old school gym. You walk in, you smell people that put in work, you know what I mean, and stuff like that. So I think if, you know, a person just looking to get into jiu-jitsu would walk into that environment, they'd probably walk away. You know what I mean? It just would only breed out a person that's kind of like a true animal type thing, you know? But I'm learning a lot, too, operating a school in the States. You know, it's completely different, you know? If you'd have to say who's probably the most successful people in jiu-jitsu, you'd have to look at like Henner Gracie and Hedon, you know, and they cater to everyone. I mean, from police to bully-proof programs to this to that. So, you know, if you're willing to make a success and a business out of it, which obviously everybody wants to get in this, and for me to spread my academy, like, we're going to be doing an affiliate in Moscow within the next couple months under Team Ballista. Wow. You know? So, like, to do that, to further affiliates and, you know, grow what I want to give to people and stuff, you have to be open to the business aspect. You know, like, everybody has, you know, you can take the hardest core of people, like, for example, Cyborg. You know, Cyborg's a hardcore, ruthless athlete, but he's a super sharp businessman, and he caters to everybody. You know, he's got his competition class, but he's got his, can you guys still hear me?
Yep, yeah. Got you. Mm-hmm.
But he caters to his competition class. He's got, you know, kids classes, everything, you know. So, yeah, you know, in the end, if we can't pay the bills, you know what I mean, then we're not going to have that competition class. And I learned from an instructor I had when I was in blue belt. Like, he had a Taekwondo program. And basically what he would do is he got the kids in there with Taekwondo, and then he just had them roll. You know, he'd teach them some forms and stuff like that. But then the rest of the class, they'd be rolling, you know. So he kind of got them into jiu-jitsu through the pretense they were going to do Taekwondo. But like he said to me, he said, you cannot run a successful school without a successful kids program. Kids are going to pay the rent. Kids are going to pay for everything. Like, your competitors, they ain't going to pay for shit. You know, competitors don't have money. They're struggling athletes and stuff like that, you know. So if you want to base your school off of being just competition, then you have to be like that, that petty go or whatever, basically just finance everybody, the Daisy Fresh guys, you know. So, you know, I think we have to do cater to everyone. And like you said, you brought up a good point there. Is, let's say I'm 300 pounds, you know, but I'm really liking jiu-jitsu. I'm watching UFC and all this stuff. My body's not right to get into it. You know, should I not be able to train, or a school not open their doors to me because I'm not in shape yet? I mean, look at how many things, good things jiu-jitsu's done for people. I want to say, I forgot who it was that said it. I think it was Kyle Tara. He said that it's not about how good you are at jiu-jitsu. It's how good jiu-jitsu is for you. You know what I'm saying? So if we're true jiu-jitsu people and we love spreading the art, it should be open to everybody. You know what I mean? No matter race, gender, size, ethnicity, nothing. All that's out the door, you know?
Agreed. One of the things, again, speaking with a lot of different school owners, what I see a lot of the successful ones is that there's always people, there's like schools underneath them that they mentor the ones underneath them, whether it be their own affiliates or just friends. But they also have people that are above them, you know, whether it's an affiliate or a friend, but it's some sort of mentorship, and it's not for jiu-jitsu, right? The really successful ones, it's not like I have this guy over here who's going to teach me the newest variation of the armbar. It's I have this guy over here who's going to tell me how to run a successful kids program, what forms to pass out, how to, you know, follow up on a sales call, all that type of thing. Do you have that person also, or are you just kind of figuring it out as you go?
I'm figuring out as I go the business aspect. You know, I was very successful in casino business, promotions business, and things like that. And I just kind of use that. I transition that into jiu-jitsu. You know, there's a saying, you know, it's like anything in life. You've got to put in the work, you know. as for mentorship, like jiu-jitsu-wise, though, like Abraham Marte has helped me a lot. Like, it's good to have, we always look for people, I guess you could say, that are yes men, that are always around us telling you, like, oh, no, you know, like last night, telling me maybe, you know, like, oh, Caleb, you're better than that guy. You know, you can beat that guy, blah, blah, blah. But, like, Abraham Marte will tell me outright, you know, dude, you screwed up here. You screwed up there. You know, this is what you need to work on. And we don't want to hear that constructive criticism. You know, we think, oh, that guy's a hater. But if we can surround ourselves with more people like that, because it's difficult, man. When you care about somebody, it's really difficult to tell them the things they don't want to hear, you know, because a lot of people don't receive that very well. But if we can kind of, you know, appreciate what that is to have somebody that will tell you the truth around you, I think you'll improve a lot. You know, you guys heard me say before, I never really started learning jiu-jitsu until I was a brown belt. You know, that was because of Abraham. You know, he really would tell me the things I didn't want to hear. And there's so many nights I hated the guy because of it. I would think to myself, he's a bully, you know, he's just like picking on me and all. But I look back now and I think, like, man, I needed to hear that. You know, who else would tell me that? I mean, my wife, you know, no matter what I do, she's going to tell me how great I did. My sons, you know what I mean? The same thing. And my students, you know, I mean, after my match yesterday, my inbox was flooded with, coach, you did so great. You did amazing. You did this. I need to hear, though, what I did wrong. You know what I mean? So I don't do it again. So mentor-wise, just in life and jiu-jitsu, he's been a big, big part.
Yeah, because you need that person, right, that kind of keeps it real with you. I also think you need the other people too, right? Because it can be the opposite. If everybody just flooded your inbox with like, you suck, that would be terrible. Sure. So you need the people to love you to be like, hey, brush it off, dust you off, and you're great. You're great to us. But you also
can be
real.
I remember I went to I did Master Worlds. Won my first match, lost my second, and he was there. And we had to spend a whole another month between Vegas and California doing seminars. I'm going over there to get a sandwich, and he'd just be like, out of the blue, like, man, dude, I can't believe you couldn't pass that guy's guard. I was like, man, come on, dude. It's been 3 weeks already. Please. I'm trying to sleep every night. Stop.
Just never let it go. Where do you see yourself in competition? Because now that you transition into there, because here's the thing, is, and I've told this to Carter before. I was like, look, a guy that's still trying to do it, but is also teaching, and like for a boxing point of view, I'm not really coaching you. You're just my sparring partner, right? And so because there comes a point when you're really coaching, it's no longer about you at all. It's all about everybody else, you know? And so there's that fine line of like, I'm still trying to do my thing, but at the same time, I have to focus on all these young kids or older, you know, young adults. So where do you stand now that you're deep in the business portion of running a jiu-jitsu academy, and then you have your competition career?
I think it's improving me. I think I'm the best I've ever been right now because, and I've said this before, I've gotten so much better off of teaching than I have just being a student because I'm forced to go over things that I think I already know. And you know what I mean? That I think I've perfected. And you cannot believe how many times I've shown a technique and then just like my mind, like, oh my God, I didn't even realize that I do it this way. I'll go over a technique and a student will ask a question. I'll think to myself, like, I never thought about it from that standpoint. And it's such a just like fresh question, you know, like that I probably wouldn't have never thought of because how many times have you done the scissor sweep? You know what I'm saying? It's not really something you think you need to go back over. You probably think you've got it perfected. But I've taught the scissor sweep so many times and so many different angles to so many different varieties of people that I feel I can hit it on almost anybody. You know what I mean? And like if you watch my game and my matches and stuff, like I just won this South Carolina regional championship up here in a super fight match. And in that, I flower sweep the guy twice. You know what I mean? And it's just basic jiu-jitsu. But you know how many times I've done a flower sweep? I cannot even count because it's one of my basic, like I teach my students, like here's your foundation, right? You can't build a house without a strong foundation. And flower sweep, scissor sweep, all these little basic things like that are there. And, I'd probably be asking my coach how to do a brembolo if I was a student, you know, how to do single leg X into K-guard into blah, blah, blah. You know, because I would think I'm too good for those stuff, but I'm forced just every day to run back over them. So I really think when you start becoming a teacher, your game really gets better, tightens up a lot.
Yeah, you're getting more. We talk about this a lot of the idea of do you want a lot like a breadth or do you want a lot of depth in your knowledge? And it sounds like by teaching, I'm assuming mainly beginners, you're just getting more and more depth to techniques. Because people always think like, okay, I know this now. And it's like, no, you don't. Like, yeah. I got buddies. I've been training these guys in really good chokers lately. They're just neck hunters. And so my choke defense is getting better. But now I'm like, enough of me being a generous gentleman. It's time for me to start choking them. But there's stuff that works on even like pretty good black belts, but like guys that are really good black for our level, good black belts that are good at choking. It's like there's little details that I'm relearning about arm triangles and things like that. That I'm like, ah, like just the difference of an inch or two makes all the difference in the world. So it sounds like that's kind of how you structured your teaching. And then let me ask you this from a training point of view, because I'm assuming most of your guys are blue belts, maybe some purple belts.
No. We've maybe got five blue belts. It's all new white belts.
So that's an interesting question, because that's something that a lot of people probably are curious. I'm definitely curious. How do you, as a seasoned black belt competitor, training with mainly blue belts and white belts, how do you get better in that environment? I know you're saying teaching, but could you kind of dig into that a little bit more?
Another one that Abraham Marte helped me out a lot with, he went and won worlds at every belt, and his best training partner were blue belts, you know, and same thing with being there in the Dominican. It taught me, you know, you have to work with what you have, and I can still get a good role out of everybody. Cause like I tell my guys, is if I come in there and I give you my best game, and you're a white belt that's been training for 3 months, I get nothing out of it and you get nothing out of it. I just smash you and that's basically it, you know? I'll let them put me in positions. I'm not saying I let them completely pass my guard. There's times I do and stuff like that, you know what I mean? But I guess you could say I'm kind of dumbing myself down to where I give them a good role and I get a good role out of it, you know? And it's nice to do that, to feel, you know, different aspects of things, because like, you ever notice how, it's nice to roll with a brown belt because you know what he's going to do. A lot of the techniques that you're wanting to hit, you can do it because if I go single leg X on you, I know your next foot's coming here and I'm going to catch it and trip it. But this spazzy white belt that I'm rolling with has no clue what a single leg X is. And when I put my leg there, he's going to act completely different. You know what I mean? So it's making my mind have to adapt to every situation. Now, there are certain spazzy white belts I won't roll with, you know, because like I say, I'm 41 and I'm not ready to have, you know, my leg messed up because of some guy moving around crazy. But I think my son is my best role for me because he's 125 pounds, moves really good, and he's a good way for me to test a lot of things, and it gives a lot back to him. Like I tell him all the time, dude, I'm 6'3". And a black belt. I mean, if you can sweep me, a guy 122 pounds, you're not going to have a problem with. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, to answer your question, you just got to work with what you have. I mean, I've been in situations where I've had no training partners, you know, and I love jiu-jitsu so much. So it's like, if you really love it, you're going to find a way to make it work. That's business. That's anything, you know?
I love it. We have a mutual friend who is constantly creating his own training partners. And it's the idea of working with what you have, right? And then it's also the idea of, he'll also say that he'll like to work with a very strong and big white belt from time to time, because he says that's more real, that's what you would actually see in a fight, because it would be very unpredictable.
And that's the thing, too, is probably 90% of competitive purple and brown belts, even black belts, might get their ass kicked on a street fight. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you want to be able to defend yourself if something happens as well, you know? And like I say, that spazziness for that first minute, you know, that guy coming at you like he's going to kill you, if you can't deal with that, I mean, you know, you're kind of screwed.
Let me ask you that question. Have you ever come across an upper level belt, let's say a purple belt, and you're thinking to yourself, yeah, they're pretty good on the mat, but I think in a real fight, like out on the street, I don't know if they'd be able to, you know, if this would, it would be guaranteed.
Oh, I'd say that's like damn near everybody in competition wise. You know what I mean? Nowadays, it's like, I mean, I don't know. I have a philosophy that I think almost in, I think great jiu-jitsu guys kind of suck at everything else. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I mean, go walk into a jiu-jitsu room and you find the dorkiest, nerdiest looking guy in that room, and that's probably the guy that's the best guy in that freaking jiu-jitsu. You know what I mean? Didn't probably never scored a single point in any sport in his entire life. That's why he loves jiu-jitsu. You know, jiu-jitsu is the last David and Goliath martial art. There's not any more. You know, you can't take a 120-pound guy and put him in boxing against a 200-pound guy, and he's going to survive, you know, but jiu-jitsu, you can't. So these guys that, like I say, you can't have an ego. And I think we talked about this last night. It's impossible to have an ego in jiu-jitsu because those guys that were always kind of the most popular guys in school and, you know, made varsity their freshman year and did this and that, they come in there and they get tapped by this dorky guy we're talking about that they know they can beat him in everything else in the world, and it kills them till they leave, you know. But those guys are the ones that kind of stick it out. You know what I mean? Probably can't win a street fight, like I say, for nothing, but get you in there on the mats and you're done. They'll twist you up.
See, I'm seeing what the problem is now. All our friends, they were those popular guys, and they also got good at jiu-jitsu.
Exactly, 100%. 100%.
I tell our buddy Jeff, I'm like, he literally would be beating me up your entire life because he's like 5 years older than me. So I'm like, clearly, I'd be the freshman, you'd be the senior, kicking my ass. He was on the wrestling team, wrestled in college, got his back up in like 4.5 years. I mean,
he's
just beating me. Like, it's just nonstop beating. It's not fair. So that's the thing. We had, like, the worst thing is if the jock is like, oh no, I like jiu-jitsu, I'm gonna start doing this, because then I can beat up more nerds. That's what's happened.
Nerds. But I also know what you're saying, Kalen, because they've got actual memes on it, right? Where there's the guy in the skinny jeans wearing the beret, and he's riding a scooter, and it's like, that guy could probably kill you, right, on the mat.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I'm the exception to it too, though. I mean, I went to college on a basketball scholarship and everything like that. But I've just always had a really hard work ethic. You know what I mean? Like things like that. I can't quit. You know, my dad instilled that into me really early that quitting was the worst thing you could. If you start something, you finish it. So this was my jiu-jitsu career. It's like 2 months in, I thought to myself, okay, I can't quit now. I've already invested 2 months. A year in, I can't quit now. I've already invested a year. Okay, I got my blue belt now. I can't quit. I've already, you know, I've made it this far. Even to now, I'm a black belt. I can't quit. You know, what am I going to do? I've got all these wasted years, you know? So everybody just approaches it different, you know? But like I say, as you know, when you're around jiu-jitsu long enough, you know the guys that are going to make it. You know the ones that you'll see there, and you know the ones that ain't going to cut it, you know? Yeah.
So as a teacher, what do you do with that? Because I agree with you. When people say jiu-jitsu is for everyone, it's not. Because you're a pretty straightforward guy too. Is there some people where you're like, this guy's going to have to prove to me that he really is interested in this for me to spend time with him?
Yeah, he won't get my attention. You know what I mean? He's going to have to, you know, like, and I've been wrong. There's been quite a few times that I've misjudged people that I really thought, you know, this guy's not going to be quit after a month and stuff like that. And they just completely surprised me, you know. But, I don't give my attention to everybody. You know, like, I believe the more you speak, the less your words mean. You know what I mean? So I kind of stay quiet, and I'll give the attention to those who deserve it, who really put in the work and all that stuff. And I think that's a good thing too, because then you get people fighting for that attention. You know what I mean? That's the way I was. The black belt, the owner of the academy, didn't even know my name. I trained there 3 years, Carter and Mo, 3 years. This guy didn't even know my name. You know what I mean? I remember at a ceremony, he just points to me when I got a stripe. He had no clue what my name was. But again, he had like 200 plus students. But, you know, so I was fighting every day for that attention, you know? And this, it's always like this too. Like, every time I was getting tapped by a lower belt, he was watching. Any time I'm tapping the higher belts or doing good, he was never paying attention, you know?
Hey, Kalen, that brings up the kind of the maybe a little bit of the opposite of where Carter was going with it. Carter and I have talked before about jiu-jitsu being almost like a superpower. And there's this idea that people, they say, well, jiu-jitsu brings the best out of you. The more jiu-jitsu you know, the longer you spend in jiu-jitsu, the better person you become. And Carter and I have gone back and forth on this, and we're like, that's not necessarily true. Sometimes you have a complete a-hole that shouldn't know any jiu-jitsu because he's just going to use it for, like, to be a worse person. Have you ever come across someone like that as a student?
They don't last. Yeah, I have. I've had people that have come to that I can see the reasons they're wanting to get in this. But like I say, the nerdy kid weeds them out. You know, how much can he take? And my son is wonderful for that, because these muscle-bound, you know, guys, military guys come in here, 200-plus pounds, you know, benching 400 pounds like it's freaking nothing and stuff, and my son runs through them and chokes them out, you know? So it's like, that's kind of my little thing that I'll do is, you know, we'll be in sparring and stuff like that. I'm like, hey, Ty, go ahead and roll with him, and I'll, you know, tell the guy, take it easy on him. No, you know, he's only 122 pounds, you know? So it just kind of like, then that's a good test for me. I'll see, will the guy be able to cut it? Or 8 out of 10 times, the guy never shows back up. We had a funny story. There was a, this was my older son. We had a big state trooper come in. This guy looked like Brock Lesnar. I mean, he could go like this and a muscle would pop up over here, you know, just crazy. And he comes in and now he's throwing everybody around, just like thinking he's the man. And at the time, my older son, I think, was like 13 or 14. And we did the same thing, like, here, man, go over here and roll with Ty. And he gets in there and rolls with him and gets right on his back and submits him with a rear naked choke. Needless to say, we never seen the guy again. You know, those guys, they get weeded out usually, you know.
I love it. You know, I was thinking about, you know, when we end the show, to ask you a question that's kind of a generic question, right? Like we usually ask, or I usually, not on the podcast, but people that are in jiu-jitsu, they're running a school, they're in business, I'll usually ask, like, what's your best training technique, or what are you best at in jiu-jitsu, and same thing with business. But I want to do the opposite today. I want to end on, what is your worst area in jiu-jitsu? And what's the area that you're trying to get better at in jiu-jitsu? And the same question for business. What's your worst area in business? And what's the area you want to get better in business?
Okay. Jiu-jitsu by far is stand-up. I mean, like being able to, my takedowns are the absolute worst. And I'm an idiot. I post all of my matches with me pulling guard. So it's like, just go look up my YouTube channel and stuff, and that's all you see is me pulling guard, going to close guard, sweeping or submitting, you know? So it's like anybody does any research on me, they know I'm going to pull. You know, it's like I have the worst takedowns in the world because I get so frustrated doing them. You know, I hate it. I hate judo. I hate wrestling. It's important, but I hate it, you know? I just, same thing then when I played basketball and we had to run, I was that kid that when I got to the other end of the field away from the coach, I would just move my arms like this. So I really walked, you know. I hated that work in for wrestling. It's something I need now. I'm noticing it. I lost this last match. The guy took me down, and I wasn't really happy with that. You know, like I felt if I could have put him on his back, I'd pass his guard. My guard pass, like I'm known for my close guard. But my guard passing is levels above that, way, way better. But I'm not utilizing that by taking the person down. And I'd say that's the thing I hate the most, that I'm not doing. And then business-wise, man, these programs, I've gotten these things, like I'm doing a Wattify now to kind of bring my school all together, you know, and automatic billing and all this. Man, I freaking terrible, dude. The worst. Like, I'm messaging these people every day, like, man, I screwed up and just triple billed somebody. Like, can you help me out here? And I'm awful on that. Like, just the technology aspect of it. I'm very good at promoting and stuff. That aspect I can handle, but just, like, I don't know. I probably need to hire a receptionist because it's like I'm over there covered in sweat, putting in rounds. And then somebody comes in, you know, a grandma with her two children, and I'm bleeding and, oh, you know what I mean, over there, and I've got to go talk to her about how it's going to help her son, you know, with this and that. So, yeah, I think I need to figure out how to become more structured, I guess, for, like, a jiu-jitsu school.
More I love harder it, brother. To do or something. I love it. Man, I absolutely... we both love having you on the show.
Yes.
And we say the same thing every single time. It's because you're so candid. Yeah. You're so straightforward and honest that exactly what you said earlier, you need those people around you that just kind of keep it real, and you always keep it real with us on the show. That's why we love having you.
Now, it's always a pleasure to be here, man. I've been looking forward to this.
Nice. Well, we're going to have you back out real soon. Any last thoughts, Carter?
Yeah, that pregnant joke, I'm gonna use that. So
I was thinking about you too with that one. Every time I drop a jewel for you.
I know. And it's no. It's always like, I see Mo, we know it's gonna come. I'm like, when's it gonna be? And then I get lulled into this thing. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And then bam, it just hits me. I'm like, oh, it wasn't even expected.
That's
so good.
The apparel line you guys should start doing with Roll Bliss, just my quotes.
Yeah.
Hey, when we make you a custom gi, we're gonna take some of your quotes and we'll sublimate them on the inside of the gi.
I mean, you know, Jocko's got like, you know, get after it, blah, blah, blah. What about this? This is more it's funnier.
What do you want to be? The world's tallest midget? That's it.
Yes! Well, I love it.
Oh, I love it. My brother, this episode is in the books. Thank you so much for being here. To check out this episode, to re-listen to it, or to check out our past episodes, go to thejujitsuoflife.com. You can also check us out on Apple iTunes, like, review, subscribe, all that type of thing. A shout out to Robles, makers of the world's finest custom jiu-jitsu apparel. Nobody can be you better than you. Be authentic, Robles. We make custom gis. Yellow Pine Investments makes custom warehouses. Check them out. Check out our boy, Caleb Callista. Support him in every way that you can. He's an awesome competitor, awesome instructor. Also, check out his DVDs on sneaky submissions. That's all really, really great stuff. And again, like Caleb says, he has a great game from the back. I think that's really a lost art nowadays. People are always trying to work the top game, and they're forgetting about how important it is to be able to be deadly off your back. Also, check out Jiu Jitsu on the Go with our boy, Steve Hordensky. And if you're in the Austin area, check out Chaparral Moving. They have Moving Down to a Science. I'm Mo. That's Carter. That's our boy, Caleb Callista. Thank you guys for watching, and we wish you guys nothing but the best, both on and off the mat. Take care.
Thank you, guys.
That's it for this episode of the Jiu-Jitsu of Life. Your hosts are Carter Fisk and Mo Siddiqui. This podcast is brought to you by Robles, makers of the world's finest custom jiu-jitsu apparel. You can subscribe to the Robles newsletter to get the exclusive content at robles.com. You can find more episodes of this show on our website at thejujitsuoflife.com. And you can subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts. Thank you for listening, and we wish you a great week, both on and off the mat.